This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Recently, videos of a woman losing her temper at another driver on the Tuas Second Link went viral on social media. And if you had seen any of the videos, they showed her pulling off the license plate of the other driver's vehicle and throwing it at the windscreen, among some other actions. So, well, this case of road rage is not an isolated incident, especially in Malaysia, where driving can be, well, stressful, to say the least. But how does stress on the road escalate into road rage? And is there a serious psychological factor to be addressed here? Today, I'm speaking to clinical psychologist Faith Chong to sort of try to go a little bit deeper and understand road rage a little bit more. Hi, Faith. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So Faith, I mean, I don't know if there are actually statistics, you know. Do you think cases of road rage are becoming more common? Or is it just a case of, you know, now everybody has a mobile phone and a social media account and, you know, we just simply hear more about it?
Yeah, I do think that with social media, we do hear more. But in general, you know, global statistics-wise, there is a rise in recent years of road rage. Perhaps because, you know, everybody owns more personal cars and, you know, they believe that without a car, it would be inconvenient to travel. And so with that, there's just a lot more traffic congestion. So it increases the stress on the road, you know, gets really stressful. It does make a difference. And there has been an increase overall. I think in Malaysia, there has been a statistics as well by MIROS, Malaysian Institute of Road Safety, which showed that around 18% of our drivers, around 2.4 million drivers, are considered angry drivers, highly angry drivers.
So speaking of anger, or that emotion of anger, maybe we can take a few steps back and actually look at what is anger, right? And what's happening in the brain, even, you know, how does it affect the body when somebody is angry? And how does that affect an individual's actions and behaviors?
Anger is an emotion that is actually very normal to have. It is healthy to have to a certain extent. It depends how we express it. And so, you know, there is this part of our brain, if we were to simplify it, there's two parts. One is the survival part, and one is more of like the logical, the one that makes decisions, that plans. And when we perceive an attack, we feel angry. And how that happens is our prefrontal cortex, which is that rational part of our mind, it goes offline. So that all the resources goes into our survival part of the mind, so that we can survive that situation, right? So that we can protect ourselves. And that's where it activates this thing called the fight, flight, and freeze reaction. And anger could very much be, especially aggressive behavior, could very much be that fight reaction to protect ourselves from perceived threat. So
in a sort of healthy situation, you should be able to sort of balance back to the prefrontal cortex again, the rational part taking over again, right?
Yes, that's right. It's supposed to be temporary. It's supposed to help you, you know, like tackle that situation, get out of it alive. It should not be for the long term.
Yeah. So, you know, then in somebody whose anger gets out of control, is there some sort of disconnect where the rational part doesn't kick in?
At that point, most people, when they're angry, it is hard to be rational, especially if you have not learned a lot of emotional regulation skills, even more so. It's really hard to engage that prefrontal cortex, that part of your mind. Perhaps with more skills, with more practice, that could be learned. For sure.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I would probably bring up emotional regulation skills again a little bit later. But coming back then to somebody who is an angry driver or somebody who's prone to road rage, then could that describe all of us? Or is there a certain psychological profile, do you think?
I do think that we all can be somewhat prone to road rage, maybe different severities of it. There's like the verbal, physical kind. But statistics have shown that with younger people, they're more prone to road rage. Perhaps, with each and every one of us, also with the underlying stress that's going on, taking that to account. Perhaps people with mental health issues already, you know, with anxiety, depression, then anger, you know, is a way to express all of that. And maybe people who are more impulsive, more prone to taking risks.
So at the same time, it's strange because I've heard and even know of some people who seem typically mild-mannered when they're not behind the wheel. And then when they get behind the wheel and something happens and, you know, they display a level of anger that you just typically never see in them. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's true. So in a sense, you know, it could be environmental as well, right? It's not part of their personality, their temperament. You don't see that often. It could be the environment, what they're going through. And, you know, we are all triggered by different kinds of things. Perhaps for them, driving is a huge trigger for them.
And so when we talk about road rage, what kind of driving behaviors fall under that? That would be quite non-typical and, you know, almost abnormal.
Okay. So that would be more of maybe the physical expressions of it, you know, when you were to come out of your car. I think there are very extreme cases when you were to come out of a car and do something that could be considered as an assault, that could be harmful for another person or for yourself, or just in general, that could affect the safety, even if you were in your car, it affect the safety of yourself or other people on the road.
So it could be, I mean, I think we know any sort of abusive, verbal abusive or physical abusiveness, clearly a manifestation. But even driving recklessly, then would that be a manifestation of road rage?
I think that would be manifestation of aggressive behavior. Yeah, you could be recklessly driving for multiple different reasons. And yeah, if you were recklessly driving because you were angry and there was road rage, it could cause danger for the people around you and for yourself, and people in your car. Yeah.
So I also wonder how much of it is learned behavior that you pick up as a younger person or a child, watching perhaps adults like parents and how they respond on the road.
We can't say what's the major determinant. I think partially it does contribute. You know, we have seen that research does show that modeling, children learn from modeling, children learn from imitation, right? And we learn to drive even before we actually learn driving. We're sponges. So research has actually shown also that the driving style of parents, there is a link with that and the driving style of children in their first year. So there could be a huge significant link to learned behavior.
So certainly as parents, if we're behind the wheel and our children are in the car, you know, there are little ears and minds picking it up, aren't they?
Yeah, and we learn how to express our emotions or regulate our emotions from our parents. If we see them raging in the car, we learn that anger should be expressed this way, and it's normal and it makes sense, you know, so it's normalized in that aspect.
What about there are gender stereotypes, you know, the angry male driver. Is that necessarily true?
Also, statistics does show that it's true, even though I hate stereotypes, that yeah, male more than female, younger more than older. I think perhaps because males, maybe it's socially acceptable, maybe they learned it as well. There's more overt, observable behaviors to express their anger. We all express it differently. And for females, they learn to express it more overtly. Maybe they have whispered insults. They vent to a friend, you know, something like that. So research has also shown that males show more physical aggression, even though females actually show more driving anger. So they feel more angry, but the displays are very different.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. So in these are probably from surveys where women respondents then say that, and they poll higher, do they, in the amount of anger they feel?
Yeah, they actually feel more angry, perhaps because they perceive more risk. Maybe a lot of women, they have children in the car or family in the car, and to avoid danger, they don't have that physical aggression because of the people in the car, but they do have that risk towards danger, and so they feel more angry.
All right. So let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, I want to find out then, you know, how do we look at this from a mental health perspective, constructively helping people to identify the root cause of these emotions and what to do about it when it is posing harm to themselves and to other drivers on the road as well. I'm speaking about road rage to clinical psychologist Faith Chong. I think it's a perennial problem on Malaysian roads and elsewhere as well. It's not getting any easier with the increased levels of stress that we're all experiencing, as well as higher levels of traffic jam. We all are experiencing that as well every day. So we'll come back and talk solutions and skills, hopefully, right here on Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. My guest today is Faith Chong, a clinical psychologist. We're discussing road rage, the psychology behind it. What drives, pun intended, some people to become tyrants behind the wheel, to be triggered by certain incidents like traffic jams or people who cut into their lanes or any other transgression that occurs on the road, and somebody may exhibit aggressive behaviors, then it could be verbal abuse, physical abuse, or it could be just, you know, a lot of pent-up anger that the driver is experiencing. When it comes to an individual constantly, and I think perhaps frequency is something that I'm trying to get at as well, constantly feeling angry when they're on the roads, you know, driving to and fro work every day. What are your concerns for that individual's mental well-being?
Yeah, so even if it's not causing harm to someone else, it could be causing internal harm to themselves. That's true. The frequency of it, if it's happening all the time, if it's happening across different situations, not just during driving, if driving becomes an additional stressor, in fact, you know, and if driving is a daily thing and it's an additional stressor, how much more pent up emotions it could bring, a lot of harm to your mental health, could bring about anxiety, depression. Those are things that could happen.
Without actually revealing personal, you know, clients' information, of course, but I'm just curious, in your clinical experience, do clients come to you with actual issues of road rage, or does it come up as other problems that they're also dealing with?
A little bit of both, yeah. Sometimes it is with a range of other difficulties. Sometimes they come in specifically to have anger management skills for road rage. So it could be one of the presenting symptoms in their life, but after, you know, talking more, you could see that it could come from a variety of different things, and driving is, or road rage is just a symptom of all of that.
Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. If somebody is experiencing, you know, quite problematic kinds of issues when it comes to road rage, would you say it is a mental health condition where they should seek some form of support?
I think it depends how much it is affecting their life, their functioning, you know, at work, their relationships. Are people pointing it out? Are people scared? You know, is it affecting their safety? There's no one hard and fast rule of when to seek help. But if it is, you know, affecting many different areas of their life, then yes, for sure, seek help. It can only improve the situation, it can only help you.
Mm. What kind of methods could help them?
So you will learn anger management, you will learn stress management, because a lot of it is how you regulate stress. You will learn emotional regulation skills. If you want to know some specifics, the simple ones being deep breathing skills, relaxation skills, even cognitive restructuring, you know, ways to adjust your expectations. Because we have expectations that when we hit the road, it's going to be smooth sailing, it's going to be convenient, people are going to do things my way. And so when things don't go the way that you expect, you know, that's where you feel angry, you feel attacked. So adjusting expectations to things that are more realistic, that people do make mistakes and things can be inconvenient on the road, those kind of things.
Mm. It does sound very simple when you describe it, but Does it take a lot of time for people to be able to normalize these skills and behaviors?
The thing is, you are unlearning a lot of behaviors that you have learned initially. So it takes time to unlearn and learn new behaviors, but it's not impossible. I have seen success.
You mentioned emotional regulation skills, anger management skills as well. Is it possible to sort of give us an illustration or an example of what someone might learn in the course of developing these skills?
Maybe they might learn perspective taking. They might learn distress tolerance skills. So because anger, like what we talked about, it's a temporary emotion. So after anger subsides, you know, you do engage that rational part of your brain. But in the moment, it could be really hard to do so. So you learn some skills to ride through that urge, ride through that urge of doing something aggressive, of reacting impulsively to your anger. You learn some skills to ride through that and engage back your rational mind. Something like that. Does that make sense?
Yes. But also, it's one thing to talk about it and learn it in therapy in a pretty safe space. It's another thing when you are on the road and the stress factors are right there in your face, right? What do clients relate to you about, you know, sort of translating what they learn with you into actual application?
That's the whole point of therapy, right? That's why it's regular. You have it more often than once because it's not just theoretical. It has to become applicable in their real life. So, you know, you teach some skills, they go and try to do it, and you see if those are skills that they can cope with. We all use different kinds of coping strategies. So it's kind of with a trial and error and seeing their own personality and what they have used before in similar situations when they've gotten angry, what has been effective for them. And you see how it goes. They try it on the road, they come back to you and they track it, they monitor it. They track their reactions, they track the intensity of their reactions. They track the strategies and how effective it is. And we collaborate from there.
So there has to be an expectation that this is not a one-off session that's going to change you and that people shouldn't feel discouraged if they revert to some emotional outbursts even after having gone through a couple of sessions, right?
Yes, that's a really good point. We aren't perfect. We can learn skills and we can give them a try, but relapse is also normal. Emotions are normal. Sometimes in the course of therapy, it's not linear, you know, it's not immediately everything falls into place. Just like what we talked about expectations on the road, there can be hiccups, but we can learn to get back up as well.
Now, the difficult part is when an individual doesn't recognize that he or she has a problem and doesn't want to seek help. And you can't force somebody into any type of therapy if they aren't willing to, right? What do you think would motivate an individual like that to seek help and to recognize there's help out there?
It's true. We can't force anyone to do anything, but we can encourage them. We can give them that suggestion and normalize it as well. That seeking help is not something that you do only for extreme situations, but you know, you can seek help at any time and there should be no stigma about it. Maybe pointing out as well how in different ways it could be affecting their life, how it's spilling over to different things. But you can only suggest and from there, you know, they have to take it from there.
So also, what can people around that individual do to help diffuse a situation? Are there skills that, say, loved ones, you know, partners or colleagues can learn as well? And in the case of road rage, Bystanders usually don't know what to do, right? And then out comes the mobile phone. But, you know, I guess I'm wondering whether even for us who are not in the situation of having anger management issues, what could we learn to help support that person?
I think that firstly, anyone can be prone to, you know, feeling angry if there's just a buildup of different kinds of stress, especially post-pandemic. But yeah, for us as loved ones, maybe in the car and we're not holding the wheel, talking to them, maybe giving them affirmations as well that it's okay, we're safe. You know, it's okay. And anger is not going to do anything, right? Reminding them of consequences of road rage. You know, anger is not going to solve the issue. And just helping them delay that urge as well, whether it's talking to them, sometimes playing music, you know, listening to a podcast, letting them vent out in the car. They can be expressing themselves in the car, screaming in the car even, but letting them express themselves and relieve that rather than escalating the situation.
Right. So, like you said, I think we're all, none of us should count ourselves immune to road rage. So perhaps we can wrap this up with simple tips, right? How do we recognize that we're tipping over into a point that's becoming dangerous? And on our own part, some simple tips to manage our anger if something does trigger it.
I think firstly, knowing if this could be a potential trigger for you, if it's happened before, and also some warning signs, really understanding your body, being mindful of when you are starting to have those early warning signs of anger, like your head is getting hot, there's a lot of tension in your chest, your heart is beating fast, you know, your fist is clenching. All of those are actually telltale signs that you are getting really angry. And if we can catch them from there, it takes practice, but if you can catch them from there, then you can already start intervening. So before you drive, if you already know that it could be a trigger or you already realize that you are in a highly stressful situation, plan your route ahead, leave early, don't expect that things will just go smoothly, adjust your expectations in that sense. And when you're on the road, if it happens, I know decisions happen really quickly sometimes. So of course, mindfulness of the signs of your body, mindfulness of, you know, how you're feeling and what other people are doing, that takes practice. Deep breaths, that is, it physically forces your body to relax. Like, it feels so simple, but it really works. And maybe having a mantra, you know, something that you tell yourself, I'm safe, I'm okay, you know, anger's not going to fix anything, it's okay. And empathizing as well, you know, what maybe other people are in emergency, that's why they do what they do. You don't really know what's going on the other side, you know, we're in this bubble and we can start to believe and jump into conclusions about what people are going through.
Not just saying, oh my God, you're so stupid. Oh my God, why are you breaking the law, right? Everyone's going through the same terrible situation when we're stuck in a jam or when there's when the road is in unimaginable conditions. For the benefit of listeners who are listening to us while driving, perhaps a very, very quick demonstration of deep breathing, Faith. It's not just a matter of in, out, right? Perhaps you could walk us through one cycle of it and how people could do that on their own.
Okay. Three simple steps. You know, we can start with trying together with me breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. Second step is try to breathe through your stomach. I know in that moment, maybe it's a little bit hard, but through your diaphragm instead of your chest. And the last step is a count. So let's do the count together. It will be four counts in and hold for four counts. And then you breathe out for a prolonged four counts. So you want it to be really slow and really deep. And you want to focus on the counting and on the breath going in your nostril and out your mouth. Okay, so let's breathe in. 2, 3, 4, and hold. 2, 3, 4, and breathe out. 3, 2, 1. And you can do this a few times. And I want you to also imagine when you're breathing in, you breathe in relaxation. And when you breathe out all the tension. When you do this around 5 to 10 times, you might feel differently.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Faith. And I hope for all of you listening, that simple technique, at least in the heat of the moment, will help to calm you down. And of course, seek help if you recognize that there are certain aggressive driving behaviors that you're displaying, which are getting out of control, which could be of harm to you, to others in your car, or to others on the road as well. We've been discussing road rage together with clinical psychologist Faith Chong. This has been Health and Living BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.